Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go. When I look to the sky, something tells me you're here with me. And you make everything all.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Comlock Center and can be found on the web at www.comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K. Tonight's guest is Renee Jorgensen, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
Well, Fran, and I do look forward to our guest tonight. He's an expert in the near-death experience and has done a lot of research should be an interesting interview. Before we get started, I know we printed out an article that Claude Swanson, who our listeners may be familiar with, he's a physicist, trained at MIT, he has a website called SynchronizeUniverse.com, and he spearheads this global peace prayer, and he sends out a notification of it when you're on the list. And the theory behind it is that especially when in times like this, right now there's a lot of unease in the Middle East. And the theory based upon science is that if everybody were to pray, and by pray, I don't mean in a religious dogmatic sense. I'm talking about a meditation or sending out good feelings to the universe and so forth. But if people pray at the same time, the effects are greatly enhanced, and that's been proven in research of the Global Consciousness Project and so forth. But it's interesting, for those who would like to join in, if you go to his website, there are complete instructions there. But
along with a calendar that shows you the best time to send out those intentions, those prayers.
Yeah, I mean, go figure, but there's science to back up the fact that there is, even within the day, there is a specific best time when intuitive messages are both most accurately sent, and received. And he has charts that pinpoints, and he gives the different times, as you mentioned, like from all over the world, so
right,
people can join in.
For both receiving and sending.
Yeah.
That's what's so interesting.
And, the theory behind the specific time is that there's a certain time based upon, planetary alignment where it's the least noisy in terms of psychic communication, which means it's clearer to send and receive. So it's a pretty interesting concept, and who are we to say that it wouldn't work?
It's worth a try when you look at the state of this world and all of the fighting and all of the power plays that are going on, and it's all this negative energy that's just stirring and stirring and stirring, and then you got to wonder, with all the nature stuff that's happening that's negative, is nature responding to all this negative energy as well?
Well, then, do you think that you can, that all of these catastrophes that are happening that we're seeing are, naturally occurring catastrophes, I mean, could we prevent it through the same, global consciousness or global prayer?
Well, my theory is if everybody would start thinking positively, since we are all one, all united, we would change the course of everything, that things would become more positive and less negative.
Well, you know, it's not beyond the realm of possibility. You know, if the theory is that we emit electromagnetic energy, a lot of people have think that most of it comes not only from our brains but from our hearts, and we can affect other human beings and other species. Why shouldn't we be able to affect the environment, you know, which also, you know, is affected by energy? So, I mean, I guess it's possible. But, you know, I was thinking about this today as I was driving around in the car. If I were to ask you to give me a percentage, you know, both in your business and your personal life, of how much of your daily activities is dictated by intuition, I mean, how would you answer that? I mean, is a little bit governed by your actions intuitively, or would you say a lot?
Oh, I don't know, because I think a lot of it you don't just pay attention to.
Right, because we're on autopilot, right?
Yeah, and that you do get those quiet little voices that you don't actually hear that'll say, you know, take the blue mug for your coffee this morning and not the red, only to find out when you went back to the cabinet, the red, somebody put it back because it was dirty instead of washing it. Oh, you could have gotten so sick. So there are a lot of things, I believe, that not so much autopilot. I think that's not a good way to describe it, because autopilot insinuates that we're not paying attention to what we should be paying attention to. I think that the subtle voice inside of us that guides us, we are paying attention to, but not in the same sense that we're accustomed to paying attention to things.
Well, a lot of people, I would put myself in that category. I say autopilot because you just do things based upon the facts and based upon things that you've done, you know, in the past. And maybe those little voices and that information is coming, but I'm not recognizing it. You know,
and you're going on autopilot, not listening to your voices, not attuned or open to receive those voices that could keep you from making a bad decision.
Right. Well, it's hard to, you know, to navigate your daily lives, you know, and rely heavily on intuition. I mean, for example,
you know, I think you can.
Well, I mean, let's say that every time you had a bad feeling, you know,
yeah.
So. You kept your child home from school because you thought something might happen, or you asked your spouse, you know, to stay home or whatever. I mean, that could, you know, you get these bad feelings all the time if your intuitiveness is not fine-tuned. So you might have your child home from school, you know, 10 days a year, and he'll get into trouble. Or you might have your spouse not go to work, you know.
Well, see, but that speaks to the concept of, if you are getting these sensations, and they're not just a quiet little voice in your head, then spirit is begging you to pay more attention to those things so that you do know if it's, do I keep the kid home or do I not drive my car today?
Right. What will be interesting is to dedicate, let's say, you know, one day. I say, okay, tomorrow I'm going to, every single thing that I do, I'm going to try to do intuitively. Even if it goes against the grain of what I normally would do or I think I should do, and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
I guess everybody should take a day off like that and see what you,
I do it when I'm driving.
Yeah.
When I'm driving someplace, I visualize the different routes I could take, and one becomes apparent, and that's the way I go.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you get lost that way, right? Well, your little voice says, you know, you should go left because it's shorter, but for some reason you go right.
My GPS has told me to go left when I should have gone right. So the voices are much more dependent.
You don't have one of those intuitive GPSs?
Not yet.
I guess we're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we're going to be speaking with tonight's expert, Renee Jorgensen, who's going to wrote a book called The Light Behind God. So stay with us. When we come back, we'll hear more from, well, we'll introduce Renee Jorgensen. So stay with us. We'll be back in about 2-3 minutes.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com. I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who is trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Renee Jorgensen. Our sponsor is the Comlock Center and can be found on the web at www.comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K. Bob?
And I do have a spot for the Comlock Center. The Comlock Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Comlock Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and a teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. A grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced and the development of our consciousness. Visit comlock.com for articles, books, videos, and more help to cope with the loss of your loved one. Well, tonight's guest is Renee Jorgensen. Renee is a philosopher of religion and a member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. He shares his research and insights about life after death through his writings, media interviews, and conferences. He's the author of The Light Behind God, Awakening After Life, and Behind 90 Minutes in Heaven. Welcome, Renee.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you with us. And I should mention you do have a very informative website, which is reneejorgensen.com. You know, Renee, I often thought that the term near-death experience perhaps it's incorrectly termed. I mean, in my view, we should call it a death experience versus a near-death experience. I mean, would you agree? I think that it opens the door for a skeptic to say, well, if it's a near-death experience, then the person really didn't die, so therefore the experiences are invalid because they weren't actually dead. So you have any thoughts on that?
No, definitely. I agree very much with you. I mean, if we look at it from the point of view of the experiencer, we find that most of them, 80 to 90%, they will actually say that they weren't near death. They were actually in death. They fully believed that they were actually experiencing the other side where death is. I mean, they have no doubt about this. And that's also why you find the same high levels of agreement. 80-90% will say that they're absolutely sure that life continues because they have been there on the other side and they were still alive. So something continued for them. So definitely, from the point of view of the experiencer, there's nothing near about it. They are very firmly on the other side of life, and that's what they experience. But I think also from a scientific point of view, if we look at the science and people who have near-death experiences when they're actually clinically dead, we can begin to argue that after this, there's about 10 to 20 seconds before the brain shuts down, and therefore consciousness should also cease, but it doesn't. And these experiences that go beyond these 20 seconds, they really suggest very strongly that we're talking about experiences that go beyond just being near to death, but actually enter the realm of death. So I agree with you very much.
Yeah, a lot of the experiences that you just mentioned, when they're describing the realm that they were in, they, as you point out in your book, some of them say it was more than real.
Yes,
that's the expression.
Hyper real.
Yeah, that seems to fit in with the theory that our physical reality is the real dream, and the true reality comes after our physical death.
Yeah, very much, very much. I mean, this is standard that people say it's hyperreal on the other side. And it's almost as if it's a higher dimensional realm. And so when people go there, their sense of reality is much stronger than what we experienced here on Earth or in this dimension. And actually, in my own research, I found that more than 80%, they said that the sensation on the other side was much more powerful than what we experience here. And more than 50% actually said it was 1,000 times stronger or beyond what we can imagine to be on the other side. And it's simply I don't know how to explain it, but there's a emotional or sensation component to the experience that just is very, very extreme and very intense. And that's one of the reasons also that people are very convinced that the experience is real. Because if you have this very strong sensation, let's say you multiply your reality, your sense of reality with 100 times or 1,000 times than what you're used to here in the body or here on Earth, if you have that strong sensation of reality, then all of a sudden there's no room for doubt, because the sense of reality overtakes any little doubt you might be able to have in your mind while we're here and, you know, here in the body, basically.
Yeah. You raise a very interesting theory in your book, The Light Behind God, and that is that you raise the possibility that organized religions came about as the result of near-death experiences. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, that actually dates all the way back to Raymond Moody, the father of the near-death experience. He was actually the first one to suggest that people who have, founders of religion, that they may have actually had their insights from a near-death experience. And I've kind of picked up on that idea and then, you know, kind of guided my research towards investigating this question, what are the parallels between near-death experiences and religion? And basically my conclusion is that, because what I found here in my last research project that I published in the book, The Light Behind God, was that I did something new. Usually you will hear many researchers, they and many studies will find that the light seems to be the central part of the experience. But what I did a kind of a list of multiple choice words to describe the essence of the experience. And I listed everything from God, the light, to essence of experience and so forth. And what I found that the number one score with 80%, that 80% of participants chose, was actually the term God. And this was a kind of a new, I mean, you do hear testimonies here and there that mention gods, but I actually had the data here to actually suggest that it is very much part of the experience, this experience of being in the presence of God.
Yeah, and that experience varies, though. I mean, God may mean different things to different people. So I guess, you know, depending upon your background and your religious beliefs and your cultural, you know, beliefs and habits, I guess you see different forms of the same God, no?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, this is one of the more challenging things to understand about the near-death experience. I mean, because usually what we expect reality or truth to be something solid. I mean, in this world, you know, a table is solid and it's a table, right? But once we enter this other dimension, this other side, all of a sudden things are a little bit more hard to grasp at. And for instance, what we find is that we find a lot of cultural conditioning. So for instance, not all Christians, but some Christians might feel that they meet God or that they meet Jesus or something. Whereas if we look in the East, for instance, we have studies of Thai near-death experiences, where here you see that what they meet is the Lord Buddha, or they meet the Yama, which is the Buddhist Lord of Death, basically. So here, and they don't have one heaven, they have multiple heavens. So when you analyze the different cultures, you see that the experience is not stable, like a table. It's very different depending on the culture that people live in. So the only way we can kind of try to understand that is that there's a kind of some call it a co-creation, meaning that the experience or the mind of the experiencer kind of interacts with the experience. And so therefore, the cultural conditioning that the person brings with him or her is then projected into the experience, and this conditioning interacts with the experience. And this is it's something that's a little bit hard to understand. But actually, modern science, new science, they have a principle called the quantum hierarchy. Entangled hierarchy is the exact term. And this is something where both the object and the subject arises at the same time. And this seems to be somewhat what's going on in the near-death experience.
Yeah, and I know that you did write about it in the book about co-creating the experience, which might explain why, which I didn't even realize until I read your book, is that some of the near-death experiences talk about not only seeing deceased loved ones, but people that were still alive in the physical. So I guess there's an entanglement of consciousness there.
Yeah, exactly. This is another hint, right, that the reality that we expect to find on the other side is very different from the reality that we know. And this is one of the, for instance, Peter Fenwick, he did a study of 300 near-death experiences, and then he asked how many of these people had met somebody in their experience. And of the group who met somebody, within this group, 38%, he then asked them who they met. And, you know, some would meet religious figures. It was about 30% who met a religious figure. But 38% of this were actually meetings with somebody who was still alive. And for instance, we've also seen this happening with children. They might actually meet their parents because that's where they have the connection. So my suggestion is that what we're talking about is more a kind of interaction, maybe a form of projection, where we should see these meetings as a form of guides. So if your guide, your preferred guide, is a religious figure, well, then it makes sense to meet that figure on the other side. But if you're a guide, or if your comfort is found in a family member, this could be somebody who's still alive. If, let's say, it's a parent and you're a child, then it would make sense to have this person as a guide.
And we are talking with Renee Jorgensen, the author of The Light Behind God. The number here is 1-888-627-6008. One thing that one cannot help but see the similarities between some of the near-death experiences and some of the written religious text, in that the similarities regarding light. A lot of the near-death experiences seem to describe being enveloped in an all-loving, the brightest light you could imagine. And the theme of light is also, throughout the various, scriptures and religious texts. So I'm sure that is something that you wrote about in the book, and that's probably the biggest similarity that I could find, between the experience and religion. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think that light is one of the key elements. I mean, we find light actually going back before, obviously in the Bible we have we have Saul on the road to Damascus. He falls off his horse, and then he sees this bright light shining down from heaven. And, you know, many would suggest that that could actually be a near-death experience he had. But we also, even predating the Bible, going all the way back to Mesopotamia and Babylon, where we find the epic of Gilgamesh. And here King Gilgamesh is actually, this is a story that's believed to be more than 4,500 years old. And here he's actually also venturing through a tunnel where at on the 12th day he sees the light at the end of the tunnel, and then he experiences this very miraculous bright jeweled garden, which very much resembles the Garden of Eden we find in the Bible. So light and brilliance reflected here through jewels has very much something to, you know, it's a very strong parallel that we find to near-death experiences. But right. This is actually a topic that I've tried to put a little bit more focus on in my present research that I'm taking on right now. Where here I'm actually trying to look a little bit more into the characteristics of a religious or mystical experience, and then trying to find the parallels between these religious mystical experiences and the near-death experiences to kind of prove or to kind of investigate if there's a link.
Yeah. Well, look forward to that future research on your part. Certainly the data from the near-death experience research would differ from a lot of the fundamentalist, you know, religious views. And then I don't recall anything in the literature that talks about an angry God in the near-death experience research, you know. I mean, so, and a lot of the fundamentalists would say that, you know, that you would, you know, you're going to go to a heaven or a hell based upon whether you face a God who's angry at you or not. So, but is that true? Most of the near-death experience research doesn't show, you know, the concept of an angry God.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. I mean, basically, by far the majority of researchers, they, including myself, will agree that there is actually very, very little evidence to be found of an angry God in an angry God in near-death experiences. You might have some of these guides that I talked about earlier. These, you know, some call them greeters or guides. They might be a little judgmental, you know, as they guide people through these life reviews. I mean, we do have life reviews. About 30% of people, they will have life reviews, and these life reviews can be either we call them pleasurable or we call them distressing. And the distressing side here, of course, can be, you could probably link them to the, let's say, the Catholic idea of purgatory, where you kind of investigate all the kind of, you know, the bad things you've done in your life. But even that investigation, when we look at the motive behind the investigation, there's no intent or there's no desire to punish you. I mean, the light or God, whatever we choose to call it, doesn't have the intention to punish you. There's much more focus on learning. So it seemed to be kind of like some have described it, this as the light being a kind of caring grandparent that is showing the grandchild where he went wrong. You know, it's pointing out where we hurt other people and trying to show us the truer and deeper meaning of love. But this is not done in a sense of punishment. It's much more, if you want to put a word on it, there's definitely, I mean, we are responsible because the near-death experience does conclude that the golden rule seems to be like a law of the universe. So it is, I mean, if you do hurt people, then people might go through these distressing life reviews where they kind of understand that this was not a good idea to hurt somebody else. But without the punishment, we should probably see this more as a consequence. So there are consequences to our actions, but for you can say going wrong or sinning, which is actually the original Greek, in ancient Greek, when you look at the definition of sin, it actually meant to go wrong or to miss the target. So from ancient Greek understanding, you know, the Bible was originally written in Greek as well, we actually see that sin is not some kind of evil doing that you do intentionally. It's more a kind of a false consciousness. You could say it's ignorance. We didn't know, and therefore we went wrong. And that seems to fit a lot better with what we find in near-death research.
Mm. So these life reviews, which you mentioned, happen in about 30% of the cases. It's clearly, a self-judgment, kind of a review. As you say, there's not a panel that's sitting there and as judges and jury, but you're accountable for all your actions. So if you have as you mentioned, so if you did a lot of bad things and you have a distressing life review, what's your opinion of what happens next in this other realm? I mean, do you continue to have a distressing sort of existence, or is there room for growth? Do we progress? I mean, these are not part of research protocols per se, but will you have any opinion on that?
I have heard a little bit about this, and it is a question I do sometimes hear. I mean, there is some evidence to suggest that the longer people stay in the experience, the more positive or pleasurable it becomes. And you can also, there are multiple testimonies where you actually hear that this kind of investigation is like a it's a kind of a thing that happens first, and then people go through that, and then the experience becomes more positive. And that's why I say maybe the idea of purgatory is a kind of a healing or learning process. We have to see where we went wrong, and then we progress to something more pleasurable in that sense. So from this point of view, there seems to be very little evidence to suggest that people get stuck in these distressing experiences forever. Of course, that is what, some dogmatic religion tells us, that hell is its eternal damnation. That we don't seem to find any evidence to support that. And it wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense in that sense. So,
yeah, one thing that always confused me, maybe you could shed a little light on it. A lot of the reports that you write about from your research, The near-death experiences describe having a sense of absolute knowledge of the universe. And that seems to conflict with some mediumship channel reports that indicate that when we die, we initially have pretty much the same knowledge as we had in the physical. We're not imbued with any, great knowledge. So do you have any thoughts on this apparent, difference in experience? I mean, here on one hand, the experience is saying they have absolute knowledge, but some of the mediums are saying, no, that's not true.
Yeah. No, I think one of the very strong similarities between the religious, spiritual, mystical experience and the near-death experience is what is called the noetic quality. It's one of the four criterias of a mystical experience that William James originally defined. And we do find this very strong sense of profound knowledge or very deep insight into all the secrets of the universe, basically. Many people will come back and say that they have seen into, all the truth and all the secrets of the universe, and they had a kind of all-knowing knowledge. So this seems to be very key part of both the mystical spiritual experience, but also the near-death experience. And it's kind of, how can I explain it? In the same way I explained in the beginning, that there's this kind of expansive sensation in the experience. It's almost as if the consciousness of the individual expands, and then it becomes maybe, as large as the universe. I don't know, but it definitely expands and opens up. And this has a very strong sensation, but it also includes a lot more information than what we're used to in the body. So that's actually one of the reasons that people who come back from the near-death experience, they have a lot of trouble coming back, because it's kind of, you could say that their mind has been blown a little bit. Many of them won't be able to explain the details of all this knowledge, because when they come back into the body and back in with the brain, they can't really interpret what happened. Basically, the experience is beyond comprehension, so they can't put words on it, but they do have this experience of having profound knowledge. But then I'm not an expert in that area, but there is some evidence to suggest that there might be different levels, different dimensions. And there are some testimonies that seems to suggest that there's a kind of spirit level where some spirits are kind of, some have called them that they're kind of stuck. They're in this other dimension. So I guess you could have another dimension where you were maybe kind of more stuck in a physical mind, and therefore you would be limited. But it seems that these deeper near-death experiences, they definitely go beyond that, and they experience this very infinite experience of becoming one with everything in the universe, and therefore also receiving all the information of the universe.
Yeah, and it is also interesting that a lot of them, they have this mind expansion and this input of all this information, and then when they come back, that the knowledge pretty much disappears, which can be very unsettling. So I guess that is why a lot of people have trouble, you know, adapting. We're going to go to a short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this fascinating research from Renee Jorgensen. So stay with us, and when we come back, we will learn more about this unseen realm of existence. So we'll be back in a few.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Wimbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Wimbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Wimbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Renee Jorgensen. This show is sponsored by the Comlock Center and can be found on the web at www.comlock.com. That's K-A-M-L-A-K. If you're a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do. And yet, we know that not everyone has extra income they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. And each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 900 online stores, like Lord & Taylor, Marriott, Nordstrom's, Priceline, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. our holiday Earth, our holiday of the Earth raffle is in full swing. You can win up to 5 1-hour medium readings with Bobby Allison, Laura Lynn Jackson, Tracy Bray, Dave Campbell, or Angelina Diana. It's $5 a chance, 5 chances for $20, and it goes on from there. You can enter the raffle on our website at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. We want to thank Kim Russo. She is doing an event for us, Connecting with Your Child Across the Veil. She's one of our certified mediums. It will be on March 30th, but it is full, so we thank you, Kim. Then on April 20th, visitation rights at the Forever Family Foundation Conference Room in Oceanside, New York. We have only 7 seats left to that. That's with medium Bobby Allison. All of these tickets can be reserved on the website at Forever Family Foundation. Also, watch for the announcement of Dessert and Discarnates with certified medium Lynn LeClaire, which will be only 12 seats at this exclusive fundraiser on June 22nd. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona, and will be the first of its kind as an intensive, interactive weekend. So save the dates, November 10th and 11th, with our annual fundraiser the night before on November 9th, this year in Arizona. Back to you, Bob.
And we're back with Renee Jorgensen, the author of The Light Behind God. Renee's website is reneejorgensen.com. That's reneejorgensen.com. Renee, we touched on it a little bit, but perhaps we should, if you could let our listeners know about what are some of the other core elements that are typical to a near-death experience.
Well, we have mostly you will find an out of body experience. That's one of the kind of the first features that people, I mean, people, they all of a sudden, to their surprise, they discover that they are outside the body. And you know, many times you hear or what you might have heard it, but people are able to look down and let's say they're in the hospital room, and they're able to see their own body. And this is of course a very startling experience. And besides out of body experiences, we also have the life reviews we talked about. We also have this experience of meeting or seeing the light, which is it's a very key element of the near-death experience, which happens to somewhere around 70-some%. And then we have the tunnel, for instance. People, we're not quite sure if it's literally to be understood as a tunnel, or it's more like people experience having tunnel vision or something of that sort, because we don't find it with all people. And of course, it's also, I have to say, it's very difficult to kind of explain the experience, and each experience has unique features. So therefore, you'll find different models from different researchers that have different elements and different ways to kind of explain the experience. So it's a very unique experience that has specific subjective features of each individual, but also underneath, when we peel away the surface, we find these kind of core features as the life review, the light, and out-of-body experience, and so forth.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, from a researcher perspective, there were some startling cases of these veridical out-of-body experiences where people, they're clinically dead, and they rise above and they can talk about things that are going on in not only in other rooms but in other places and repeat conversations and so forth. So it really is very hard to explain away by traditional means.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, no. I mean, basically, you could say the debate about the near-death experience, whether it's real or not, evolves around the question of when does the experience occur. Because of course, the skeptics would like to say that this is all in the mind; it's a hallucination. But of course, the problem with that theory is that it's based on classical science, which puts consciousness in the mind only. Basically, the mind produces consciousness. So without the mind, there can be no consciousness. But what we find, as I said in the introduction, is that after about a mean of 15 seconds, the brain becomes completely inactive after the heart has stopped beating. So after 15 to 20 seconds, there's no blood flow and there's no oxygen to produce conscious experience. So when we have these, it's called the veridical perception, when we have these experiential forms of evidence where people see things or hear things, that happened after the 22nd seconds, then we have a very strong case, evidence that suggests that the experience goes beyond the mind and therefore also beyond death in that sense.
Yeah, and as you point out and others, the anoxia explanation, most people that are oxygen deprived and have hallucinations, they're anything but clear and lucid. You know, they're
pretty
disjointed. And so and a lot of the people that you write about, they have perfect clarity, and they know.
Yeah.
They describe their senses as being more acute than when they were alive, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, most of the theories are what we call dying brain theories, and this means that the brain is dying, and it's kind of its last gasp for experience or life is to produce these experiences. But when we look at, for instance, anoxia, what happens to a starved brain? I mean, I don't know. You know, we've all been on the airplane, and when we go through the security protocol, we're all told to put on our own mask first before we assist. Even a mother is told to put on her own mask first before she assists her own child, which is kind of instinctively wrong. But the reason we are told to put on our mask first is because anoxia happens fast. You don't have time to assist somebody else with their mask. And therefore, the scientific understanding of how anoxia works doesn't fit the pattern of what happens in a near-death experience, because these are long, drawn-out experiences where consciousness is clear and coherent. So the two phenomena just don't fit. But of course, what happens is that the mainstream tends to accept scientific theories without being equally skeptical about the scientific theories as they are about the near-death experience. This is kind of it's our new religion of the mainstream, and therefore the scientific theories don't have to explain themselves. They are just taken as face value.
Right. What percentage of people would you say that are when you're interviewing them about a near-death experience, do they tell you that they were told, they reached a certain point when they were told, like telepathically, that it's not their time, and they must return? I mean, is that common?
Oh, that's very common. Yeah, I don't have exact numbers on that, but I would probably guesstimate somewhere around half. 50%. A lot of people are the people who meet guides. They are the ones who are often told to return. They say your time is not over. You have something to complete. So therefore, they're sent back. So this is maybe about half the people who have the experience. But the other half, I would guesstimate, they're not told to go back, but they just suddenly, all of a sudden, they find themselves back in the body and back in this world again.
Yeah, it also raises some other questions. Of course, we're only hearing from the people that came back, So the broader question in a spiritual sense is, why are some people told to come back and others not,
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's it kind of seems, and this is kind of the paradox, and this is why some people maybe misunderstand the message of the experience. I mean, what most people experience when they're on the other side, when they experience this light, this profound love, is that life has profound meaning. So it's almost as if you could almost say, some people think that the heaven is hereafter, but what people experience in the near-death experience is almost as if heaven is here on earth, because you could say our chance or possibility of loving others is only here on earth. And therefore, life is so valuable because we have the opportunity to live life, love, and share compassion and help other people. And that seems to be kind of the purpose of the whole thing. And that's why we have these life reviews helping us to understand that the purpose, it's all about love, basically.
Yeah, and evidently the descriptions from the experiences of love differ tremendously from the way that we think about physical love. It's a whole nother dimension, so to speak, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's again, as in the beginning, I said that more than 50% in my research, they ascribe the experience, the intensity of the experience, as being 1,000 times or beyond description. I mean, stronger than what we have experienced here. So if you take the most love you ever felt in your life and then you multiply that by, let's just 100 times, then you can imagine this is a very, very intense experience. Some describe it as an explosion of love, or even like a cosmic orgasm or something. It's just a very, very strong sensation, and that's why you know, people's lives change when they come back. They're not thinking, well, maybe life is about love or maybe God is real. They really know, because the experience is so extremely powerful that they have no doubt afterwards.
Mm. What was interesting to read in your book, some of the experiences describe, you know, meeting people in this other realm that they knew, but also meeting people that they never knew while they were in the physical, but somehow they knew anyway, you know. So it seems to be this, you know, this trite saying that we always say, that everybody's connected, but it seems to be borne out by these NDE accounts, you know, that somehow they just felt connected to people that they never knew.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of people talk about like spirit families and so forth, but you also have these kind of very interesting testimonies where people meet, let's say, a father that they never knew, or let's say a twin brother that was stillborn, and then now they actually meet the spirit of that twin brother. So you have some very interesting cases where you just can't explain how this is possible, basically.
Yeah. So our mental states, you know, when we physically cross, and we feel, let's say, we're on the operating table, let's say, and we pass, our mental states will possibly affect our near-death experience. I mean, well, let's say I'm a person when I'm in the physical, and that I'm a control freak. I don't like the feeling of not being in control. Might that cause a distressing experience because I feel that I'm losing control?
Yeah, definitely. I would suggest so. There is some research, for instance, among near-death experiences that happen due to a suicide attempt. So, where, for instance, in the normal population, about 15% have these so-called distressing experiences. If you look at the research on people who attempt suicide, the distressing experiences are 50%. So you have a higher rate of distressing experiences, and this could make sense, because what happens is basically your universe, your world changes, but your mind stays the same. So the platform on the other side is your mind. So if you are attempting suicide, most people would be in a distressing state, and that distressing state would then continue on the other side. And we also do have actually some research suggesting that the environment impacts people. For instance, a German study that compared near-death experiences in both West and East Germany. And these experiences were before the fall of the wall. And what it found was that while the distressing experiences were only 29% on the West German population, it was 60%, double, in the East German population. And this, of course, could suggest that has to do with living in East Germany was very hard and so forth.
Yeah. So I know we're winding down the end of our time, but would you say that in your opinion, the near-death experience gives us the strongest evidence for life after death?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I think because we can actually use science to back it up, to support the evidence, I actually think it's the strongest evidence we have. I mean, we're not there with the final proof yet, and of course it's not easy to prove something immaterial with a science that's based on the material. That's a little bit of contradiction, but I think at least through science we can defend the testimonies as being trustworthy, because there's no scientific theory to date that's been proven to disprove the near-death experience. A lot of skeptical theories are taken at face value, but once you poke at them, they fall apart, and they're anecdotal in that sense. So I think the science to back up the near-death experience really leaves us with some of the strongest evidence in support that what people say is true in that sense.
Well, we thank you, Renee, so much for joining us tonight. Renee, again, his website is reneejorgensen.com. If you go on there, you'll not only find out more about all of his books, but there are interesting articles and all sorts of information about the near-death experience. I encourage you to visit reneejorgensen.com. There is an Amazon link to his book, The Light Behind God, What Religion Can Learn from Near-Death Experiences. You can find that on the Forever Family Foundation website. Renee, thanks again, and we hope that you'll come back and visit us again, and you can tell us more about your new research.
Sure, sure. I'd love to. And thanks for having me.
Thanks. Take care. Have a good evening.
All right. You too. Thanks.
Bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Wendy Lippo, Mark Varon, Eileen LaFada, Joanne Gerber, Lynn LeClaire, and CJ. And now, let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this: to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's waters. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto on May 9th, 2010.
And with that, remember, our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.